the narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy, your host. I'm joined tonight by Chris Morgan and Mike Brandt. What's going on, guys?
Well, I think we know one of us is just out of a coma and is probably wondering what day it is.
Well, I mean, in that coma, I had dreams of a golden winged angel.
Did you procure a golden winged angel for yourself?
I most certainly did, and it is now painted, surrounded by his bodyguards on my photo mat.
Oh. Magical.
We are the Bella Lost Souls podcast. I can't wait to get my hands on one of those myself and start painting it. I am mired. Mired's a bad word. Mired, I think, has some negative connotations. I am consumed with painting for Adepticon. Adepticon actually just changed their rules for the team tournament to allow you to include a knight, either be Imperial or Chaos, in a detachment. And for their team tournament, the detachments aren't the same as in the book. They have their own detachment rules that you're able to seamlessly pair with your other teammates, your four-man team, two people per table, and create legal list on each table. And with their rules that they had up in their primer, it was impossible to include a knight because you couldn't bind it with the Imperium faction keyword. And now you can, because they've allowed it. They've put out this thing, but you can't make it a character and you can't give it a relic. So what are we doing? Painting a knight. That's what I'm doing.
It's a castle, right?
Yeah. But see, with that, with those things in place, this is the struggle that I'm having. We're taking guard as two of our teams, and hadn't made any secret of that. But I have a shadow sword in there because I think the shadow sword pairs really well against the captains. Always play each other, so there's going to be a lord of the captains are the only ones that can take a lord of war. So the shadow sword pairs really well against anybody who might bring a lord of war choice. And it was
now let's all appreciate real fast the fact that it's 8th edition and a Lord of War doesn't mean, you know, Gazgul.
I kind of wish a Lord of War did mean Gazgul. I miss him.
Gabriel Seth.
Of all things. Interesting thing about the Shadow Sword observation is quite on point, especially because of the very limited nature of command points in the event. So even if someone does have sort of a Castellan light, we might say, because it won't be a Call's Wrath character, the fact that it's not going to be able to endure all that much time without running out of the CP it needs to function at a high level.
Right. And you also, no relic, no character, so it won't be doing the crazy heroic interventions and that kind of stuff. I mean, it takes a little bit of gallop out of its step. And so when I'm doing these, I actually have a spreadsheet provided by a good buddy of mine that is a damage calculator, and I'm plugging it all in and figuring out what does what. And, you know, the convention is, okay, dummy, take the knight and move on with your life. But then the analyst in me is like, I need the Shadow Sword and a couple of Wyverns.
Well, you definitely need them Wyverns.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty safe bet.
Well, you can't take the Emperor's Wrath on a command detachment. So this is in my specific detachment.
So you're not the captain.
I am the captain. Team. Yeah, I'm captain.
Okay, so you're going to have a Shadow Sword and just some guardsmen? Is that your detachment?
That's it. No, I mean, I got tanks in there. I got a couple of Wyverns. Got, you know, I think a Taurox in there, maybe.
Oh, wow. You're going to actually run one of those guys?
Hey, man.
I know. The only crazy people have run those that I've heard of. Especially at tournaments, right, Mike?
Well, okay. I mean, I wouldn't admit to it anymore.
I don't necessarily want to give away I will give away all the strategy. It's no big deal because whatever. But there's a lot of allied objectives in the Adepticon team tournament. So you have to control something with an ally. So having a transport that can transport your teammate's stuff could be an advantage. I mean, we're working out all of it, especially with this knight thing. We're working out all the particulars of the list, but it has thrown a wrench in it because then you start, you know, the math is way different with the knights. And that's actually one of the issues that anti-knight people have is that it just really throws off the math. And I think it's worth talking about.
Mm-hmm. The team tournament is at first. We should probably cover this for the audience, right? Like what's going on with the team tournament format so that people understand why we're talking about it in the way we are.
Sure.
So Adepticon's team event it's a hobby event first and foremost. Very, very heavy soft scores, and it's their legacy event. It's what started the whole thing.
It's one of the crown jewels of Warhammer 40K tournaments.
It is. And it's four-man teams that play two-on-two against the other team in two separate games each round, and they rotate through who's paired with who. And so you're going to always play with one member of your team at least once, and then the remaining games are captain's choice. So there'll basically be three games where you're going to round robin with each of your teammates. And then there'll be two rounds where your, you know, perfect combination can be in play. And it's interesting because you can run four detachments that are the sort of base detachment, because Adepticon basically creates these unique command detachments that can only be used within their tournament as a way of instilling sort of a natural comp and restricting the amount to which you can sort of abuse the format. Though, of course, us gamers always figure out ways.
No matter what it is, we'll figure it out.
You give a system, someone's going to find a way to exploit it.
That's pretty much how it works. The long and short is the core detachment most people will take only gives you +5 command points, and you don't get any Battleforge bonuses. So if everyone takes the standard detachment, then in each of your games, you'll have two of them, one for each player, and the most command points you'll have is 10.
That's max. The first thing. That's max, absolutely. I mean, there's ways, I guess, to modify it with getting some command point rebates from war gear and that kind of stuff at a relics, but you're beginning the game with 10, max.
Yes, at most. And that's if you don't spend anything on any pregame stuff. And then you can repeat that detachment as much as you want, and it's very basic. It's, 1 to 3 troops, 1 to 2 HQ, and then up to 1 fast, heavy, and elite.
One of each, yeah.
That's it. And so you could do that 4 times, or you can take up to 1 of the special detachments, which are basically just ways to get up to 3 elites, fast, or heavies, or to take a command detachment that has like a Lord of War option basically baked into it alongside some other things. And Adepticon has recently ruled that you can take a knight in that command detachment with the Lord of War without it breaking, you know, its house rules and everything.
Imperium or Chaos.
Alongside other Imperium. Yeah, or Chaos. Yeah. So when Paul's talking about what he's talking about, he's kind of going, how can I bring a Shadow Sword or a knight and pair it with XYZ, and how's that going to work in a team environment, you know, depending upon which of my 3 teammates I may be paired with, especially because to drive home their format, many of their mission objectives must be scored by having a unit from each team member in the game within 3 inches of the objective to actually control it.
Yes, yeah, so you've got to have this weird mix of durability and synergy. And so, you know, what you really want to do is minimize your bad pairings with your teammates. So if you're building a list and you run into a situation to where 2 of your games are going to be bad pairings with your teammates, you need to refine your list. I think if you have any more than 1 subpar pairing, then you're pretty much messing up.
Yep, that's about spot on. And so a lot of teams will do 4 of the identical same list, so there is no, quote, bad pairing. And then a lot of teams will try to go next level and do interesting combinations.
And you can do that with Guard and Tyranids, and that kind of stuff does really well for copies of the same list. I mean, I'm talking, you know, a Guard thing could have 4 tank commanders and 10 Lehman Russes. I mean, I'm not saying that's good, but you could just, you know, you could have that type of automatic synergy and redundancy across lists like that.
You can, though you have to be careful in the sense that the rule of 3 still applies for any combination that may occur. And since you must get paired with each teammate at least once, like our list, we're looking at Tyranids and Gene Stealer Cult. And initially we were like, well, why don't we just have the 2 Tyranid lists have 2 Flyer Ants each? Well, you can't do that because the one game where they get paired together, you'll have 4 Flyer Ants, which is illegal. And so that pairing doesn't work and you'd lose the round.
Listen to what Mike just said, not what I said.
Yeah, I heard the 4 tank commanders and I was like, I'm just going to subtly talk about an alternative set of facts.
Smooth like butter.
Yeah. So it's an interesting format. It's very much the same thing. People go crazy on the hobby front if you've never been. And so they surround the room with all their displays. Yeah, it's just insane. There's big team spirit awards and theme awards and everything else. And we've won the event before and won, you know, best battle and other things and various teams that have been on. But this year I'm going with Pete Foley, who's the head of rules for Games Workshop, or Book and Box Design or whatever it's called, and who's become a close friend over the years. And we're going with Tony, Kopak, and with Phil Rotokanakis, who's the head judge of Nova. And we are going to have fun. There's a very good chance that Pete and I, who both play guitar, we'll have hair metal outfits and pocket amps plugged into guitars, ready to annoy everyone as much as humanly possible.
I can't wait for that.
Yeah. And we're playing Gene Stealer 2. We're playing a good army, but Pete and Phil especially are more casual players, and Pete is an extremely casual player, and Tony and I are capable of going into secret sauce casual mode when we're surrounded by like-minded. So it will be an
interesting. So you have an off switch, is what you're saying.
I have an off switch, and I'm trying to turn that switch off and the music fun switch up to 11 this year. So we'll see what happens.
You know, speaking honestly, and this isn't meant to be like a criticism of the Adepticon team tournament, because it's still one of my favorite memories of Adepticon, Paul, is that one year that we all teamed up together. But the format of the missions, the way you build your list, how complicated it is, how hard it is to really get it to work, because you know 40k is already a lot of work to understand when you're thinking about your faction, everybody else's faction. You bring in very specifically complicated missions and a unique list format, and it kind of feels like the way that you're going about it, Mike, is just the low stress way to enjoy an event like that, where you're pretty much saving yourself from all of that extra stress of figuring it out and just going to have a good time. And that is rewarded at the Adepticon team tournament much more than at other more competitive things like say the American team tournament, you know, the ATC.
Well, it's more of a battle point focus, whereas the Adepticon team tournament has, it's not even equal weight. I mean, there's battle points is a high weight, but you're not going to place very high unless you do really well on the hobby side, unless you do really well on the sportsmanship side, unless you do really well on your whole presentation of your team. It's a pageant. I think it's really probably the best way of describing it, but I don't mean that in like in any kind of weird way. It really is a best in show type event.
Yeah, I mean, you guys nailed it. It is, you know, 10 years ago, the Adepticon team tournament would have been considered highly competitive. Because 10 years ago, the only major events were all battle points with heavy soft scores, lots of sportsmanship voting. And, you know, you'd go into the event and you could control to a degree how well you did from a battle point perspective, but it was very hard to control anything else. And so for competitive player types, it could be extremely frustrating, because you could go into an event and max your battle score and finish seventh, and you'd be really confused as to how that happened. But now that those events are sort of the dinosaurs that they maybe should have been in the terms of standard, and we have Nova and LVO and ITC, and it's very common to see a competitive style event where the best gamer tends to win, it's actually kind of nice to go to the team tournament with the right attitude. Especially because, maybe as an unfortunate side effect of the competitive edge, there can be a case where you'll play teams that are, quote, trying too hard. You know, like I saw a team today that will remain nameless that was trying to borrow 180 orc models from various friends so they could go bring a list they thought would be badass. And this is kind of missing the point of Adepticon's team tournament.
Yeah, it's a little bit of bad planning on their part.
Yeah, maybe get ahead of the game a little more. But I mean, I guess the Orc Codex came out recently-ish. But, you know, going to an event like this and focusing on just having a great time, being great sports, and playing well but not particularly obsessing over it can actually result in you finishing not too far off where you would finish if you went, you know, sort of proverbially, you know, peanuts deep in the competitive side. There have been years where we've gone and, you know, one of the teams loses like one of the games and our soft score is okay, but we clearly were there to win with lists that our opponents were like, oh my gosh, that's so brutal. And we finish, you know, like 10th or 12th or 15th with one loss. And I've seen teams go and, you know, go 4-2 and have phenomenal theme and paint and finish 10th or 15th. So it's kind of one of those events where you want to go with the right attitude, and I think maybe
you'll be rewarded for it. I mean, the energy of the room, the other teams, the people that you'll be playing. I mean, you really will be rewarded. What you get what you give in this tournament. You know, and I think that's it's really nice. I mean, there'll be people there that are simply focused on having a great time and making sure that you have a great time, and you don't get that in every event. I mean, to the degree that you get it here.
Agreed.
Yeah, and I like the variety. You know, we were talking about types of tournaments. I like the variety. I like that some of these banner events offer some variety to the gamer, you know, that may bring out different crowds to tournaments. And that's really what it's all about, mixing it up at these things.
It should be a great time.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to not playing your Shadow Sword because I probably won't be. I think Tony's the team captain.
Yeah, so. Is he bringing in? See, I'm torn. I really do want to take the Shadow Sword, but the knight, it's like convention tells me I should.
Yeah, it's a tricky thing, isn't it? We're not bringing a super heavy. We're bringing, you know, patriarchs and fly rants and you know, f tons of acolytes and Molochs and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Aberrants galore. You know, it'll be lots of models on the board and should all be really nicely painted and all that kind of stuff.
Can't argue with that.
You could try.
Well, I think you're coming at it. You're embracing the event, which is good. But I mean, I know you're still going to try to play the games and give a good game to your opponents.
Oh yeah, oh, yeah. If we play, I'm going to take you guys down.
You say that. I have a really stout win record in the Adepticon team tournament.
I hate to admit this. I have never lost an Adepticon team game.
Yeah. Well, hate to break it to you, but.
The cameras are coming out if this one happens.
That's right. Well, my team is awesome. We've actually won best sport 2 years in a row.
Wow. Who's to say it won't be a sporting competitor?
Well, but that's also taken down at least one table loss throughout the tournament. And so when you think about the fact that it was 100 and something teams or whatever, 400 and something people playing, and if you were to go through to a regular grand tournament and suck down a loss, you're not going to place anywhere in the top 10%.
Yep.
So it's very possible this is still everything you were just talking about, it all factors into your overall score, and so that helps, I think, keep the energy and the spirit of the, plus everybody's cool costumes. I mean, we're not ones that dress up, but a lot of people do, and this the monolithic displays and stuff, we're going to be joining the monolithic display club again this year, hopefully making the showcase.
That'll be exciting.
Yeah.
And I have an instant show note. I took my first loss last year in the Adepticon team tournament. I just remembered.
Happens to the best of us.
I have to retract my statement already.
It's okay. It's easy to forget those things. Whatever.
Indeed.
But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Can't wait. You know, it's just, you know, we're going to continue to talk about Adepticon leading up to it and some other things coming up this year. So, I mean, it's going to be a really good time to be playing 40K.
It is an amazing time. I think that it's easy with everything that's going on and how busy we all get to kind of miss how crazy it is. And I almost feel bad for those players who joined, you know, recently the game and don't know how close it came to folding, you know, during the 7th and 6th edition lulls. So it's pretty exciting times.
It's awesome, man. Speaking of something cool, our Kill Team Arena game that we put up on YouTube.
That was fun and phenomenally close, an 11-10 finish.
Yeah, I mean, that was my first time through Arena. I mean, of course, play Kill Team and the rules are very similar, but that's the first time with the missions. I thought the missions were incredibly well done, Mike. I don't mind saying that.
Oh, thank you.
And I had fun time. I felt like even though I was just kind of plugging away at it, that I could still have a focus because of the missions and be able to compete, you know, during the course of that tutorial.
Yeah, it was a good time. One of those bloody games, it's funny, there were a lot of great examples from that game about why I'm going to say playtesting is important, in the sense that the Kill Team Arena games are only four, really any Kill Team competitive game is only a four round game. And when that was first proposed to us and we started running through the ringer on it, it was kind of like, that doesn't sound like enough time for a game that's fast. For certain teams, that's maybe 20 models moving in total, and that's it. And our game showed it, but I think at the end of the game, we each had two or three guys left alive, all of them shaken and basically unwilling to play anymore, hiding in corners.
Well, it came down to, like, I think using a stratagem that kept one guy on an objective or something, or using one bank command. But it was a tense game. It was actually kind of down to the wire. It was nice.
It was, and it seemed perfect. Like, one more turn would have literally been our guys, well, not doing anything. It was cool. I enjoyed the game quite a lot. Plus, we had a bunch of whiskey gingers and enjoyed the company of random passersby at LVO, which was a pretty phenomenally fun convention.
Yeah, that's a fun thing. But I can see this. Well, what I liked, and I talked about this briefly on another show, but what I did like was, I've heard a criticism was that that it's a little too board gamey, but I actually liked the board game aspect of it, and then the nature of the game be able to be played without necessarily the need to have 3 and 4 levels of terrain or something like that. So I think it's something that if an organizer is looking to add something to their event that has a low impact to what maybe their budget is, that they could do things like this. And have a Friday night or a Saturday or a Sunday, you know, washout event or something.
That's a really good point. And also, I stay in touch, especially in the DC area, with a pretty large community of narrative, casual, and competitive players. And I was certain, and voiced as much during testing, I was actually quite critical or negative about the boards. I was very certain that most players would be frustrated that they weren't these big, robust terrain boards. like they're used to in Kill Team or in Games Workshop games. And I was kind of frustrated by them. Like, while we were doing playtesting, I would, you know, they gave us PDFs to print out the boards and kind of assemble them by putting pieces of paper together. So that probably didn't help. But I literally took a bunch of, you know, small modular terrain that we have and recreated the walls and everything else so that we could play with a third dimension aesthetically. And I have not found most people actually being all that critical of it. I found most people to have a reaction like you had, which is that it's actually pretty fun and pretty cool and lightweight and easy to get into. So I've been pleasantly surprised to hear narrative and casual players as well all kind of say, that's cool. It seemed great to me. I enjoyed it. Really tight, fun. So maybe my fears were all for naught.
Well, I mean, I love 40K. I mean, that's why we're here, right? And I love the terrain. I have a couple of, you know, really nice full boards of terrain. I can scratch that itch another way. I like to get in the car this weekend and I grabbed one tray of figures and the play board that folds up and sits right on the top of the tray. And that's all I had to carry to my buddy's house. You know, it's a different kind of game, but you still get that's a lot of the same visceral effects because you're moving around the figures that you like and you are blowing people up with melty guns.
Oh God, that was very painful. Or not, or rolling ones every time you had to win.
or rolling consistent ones and twos for three turns of the 4-turn game.
It was unbelievable how you did that. The proof in the pudding, by the way, is the fact that I traveled to LVO without checking any baggage and walked over to the convention to meet you for those games with just my laptop bag. And I had the boards, the terrain, all of my models and all of our gaming aids all in my laptop bag. And it wasn't like stuffed to the brim. It just kind of popped out and went to work. So that was pretty fun.
I mean, I was still desperate to play 40K, being around all that 40K. But
yeah.
But I was still able
to appreciate. You and me both, man.
The FOMO was hefty for, I think, many of us. That always happens when you're that close.
Yeah. But I did really enjoy it. And I think it's something that people, if you already like Kill Team, then you're going to like this too. But it is different. It's different because there's a little bit more focus on objectives and you're dealing with a two-dimensional environment. But that also includes like going around corners. You get a little bit of we talked about it on a previous show about being a little bit more like Zone Mortalis, but it's kind of like it's even got like a little Space Hulk-y type feel to it.
Yeah. It reminds me of like, when special forces are doing their, you know, breaching training in a lot of ways. And it also, so it's more balanced than I expected those boards to be as well, in that I've seen having, you know, firepower be very important despite the tight corners, and lots of difficult decisions to make as far as whether or not you want to, you know, get stuck in combat, but then potentially get locked into a certain part of the board as your opponent feeds individual chargers in to keep your combat units pinned for entire turns.
Well,
you want to shoot.
When we did the four-person game,
which was awesome also,
that ratcheted the strategy up. When we were talking about, oh, we're going to go pin here, we're going to do this, we're going to do this combo. I mean, it was pretty intense with the way that we were able to, the game supported the intensity that we wanted to bring. It didn't have to be that way, but we were both playing we were playing competitively against, not you and I, but we were on the same team. We were playing competitively against our opponents. And the strategy was kind of intense. I felt it.
Yeah. And we won, by the way, just so everyone knows. No. The narrative we forged was
Mike, you're
success.
Such a filthy casual.
I'm very casual. What can I say? It was a cool game. We also, just to drive on the point of that, we didn't have enough models. So a couple of buddies of mine were in Vegas and also took off the GT, but they hadn't brought any models to play with. So we went around to, I don't know if it was FLG's shop, but they had just a bunch of used models and bags. And for like $20, we bought like 20 painted Marines. And like
just some towers something, wasn't it? I think it
was. Yeah, well, Chris bought some towel. I felt bad because I forgot that he'd bought the towel and I just left all that stuff in Vegas. So he was like, hey, do you have that towel? I was like, no. But it got one game of Kill Team in before it was done. That was a good game.
Yeah, it was fun. It was neat to see that the game supported that complexity, but also it was the kind of the complexity that we wanted it to be. I mean, we put it into it with a little bit of a competitive minded play. So it was nice to support it.
I was pleased to see that the Battle Brothers format actually felt like the 101 format. It didn't. Oftentimes, the team version of Games Workshop's products feels like kind of Like, it's not going to work unless you're very casual with it. Like if you try to get too serious, you're going to quickly break it. This one felt not at all like that. Yeah. It felt like it was just a larger scale version of the one-on-one game with two people, you know, going up against two instead of one-on-one. It was pretty surprising, honestly.
Yeah, I liked it. Let's take a quick break. Then we'll come back and we'll talk about a charity event coming up and some more awesome things that we're all going to be doing at various times of the year.
Right on.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games, Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, we are back. I still got Chris and Mike.
Dun dun dun.
I would just like everyone to know that Paul totally lost our one-on-one kill team game that I was totally not training him and him playing it for the first time ever.
I got trolled. Surprise rules? No, there were no surprise rules. It was consistently missing with a multi-gun kept me so far out of that game during the first couple of turns.
Yeah, would have gotten tabled probably very quickly had you not rolled a one on three or four straight multi-guns. But anyway.
But let's talk about, we just talked about that for a second ago, but like going around corners and there's a lot of strategy in the game, but more about that. I would like to talk more about this as the game evolves and as more people start to run some events for it, because I do think this is going to be a great Friday evening thing before your Saturday and Sunday tournament starts, or if you start on Friday and people, it's a win-loss type thing and people drop on the game, whatever, you got something to do on Sunday. I think it's a perfect thing for that. I really do. But Chris, you have a charity tournament coming up that I'd like to hear something about.
Yeah, so you guys may or may not remember the first round of War Games for Warriors was in 2017. It's been about a year and a half, and it was a wild success. I did like a live Q&A paint thing on the Facebook page and all that talking about it. But we raised thousands of dollars for both for the Children's Miracle Network and for the Fisher House Foundation. And Children's Miracle Network, of course, that's for kids in hospitals. The Fisher House Foundation helps hospitals in a different way, where if it's a member of the military who is injured or they have family who is sick, Fisher House Foundation finds a place for their family to stay by the hospital they're getting treated at, so that they can be close and not have to worry about where are we going to sleep, are we going to have to pay for a hotel, what are we going to do for food. So two very, very worthy causes. And we're bringing the event back. And next month, so the entire month of March is turned into War Games for Warriors Month around here in Utah. It's been pretty awesome because you don't have to live here to support the event. We have raffles and things that are going on. But let me just kind of break down some of the cool things that are going on. So March 2nd and 3rd, we are having a GT-sized competitive event at Gajo Games in Sandy, Utah. And we have some people coming in from out of state to come and participate in that. We're raffling off a lot of different prizes. We have an entire Age of Sigmar Oryx army that's going up for raffle that somebody donated. So that's pretty awesome. We also have various GW box set games that are going to be handed out. And it's not a you pay money in and then the money goes to prize support. 100% of the money that is being donated for these raffles and for the entry fee is basically a receipt to the charity. If you want to participate in the event, you send money to the charity, you show that you sent the money, and that's your ticket in. So all of this is just donated, and we have several different stores and sponsors and partners that are helping out with it. This, of course, has been organized by Mario Capizzo, one of the round one Warhammer Heroes winners, and he's been working his butt off to try and get this ready. We have the local Utah hockey team is even sponsoring the event.
That's cool.
Which, yeah, it's really awesome, and we are doing an Infinity tournament on March 9th. We're doing an Age of Sigmar tournament on March 16th. We have War Machine and Hordes on March 30th. There's also some open gaming that's going to be going on for whatever you feel like playing. We have events with people we've partnered with down in Florida that's going on as well. So it's really gotten a lot bigger. And we're trying to include as many game systems as possible because the end goal is raise as much money as possible for these charities. We want to outdo what we were able to do with our first year. And I say we. I mean, Mario is the one who's done 90% of the legwork on this. I'm just happy to be able to talk about it and to let people know that, hey, you can do this. We're having a stream set up so that on Extra Life, which we did at the last one. So if you wanted to watch games, I was on the stream for Extra Life the last time. But if you want to donate money by watching on Extra Life, that money goes to Children's Miracle Network. So there's a bunch of different ways that everybody can participate. And I'd really love to see the community come together, even if you can't be here, to support a great cause run by a great guy for great people. And if you have any questions on it, just send a message to the FTM Facebook page, or you can message me if you're friends with me on Facebook, if you want to learn how you can support. Again, so we have the GT on March 2nd and 3rd. We have Infinity on March 9th. We have Age of Sigmar on March 16th. And then Open Gaming and War Machine Hordes on March 30th. So I'm really excited that March is just going to be a big charity month for us. It's kind of like Charity March Madness with
hockey. Man, that sounds cool, dude. Sounds cool. Yep. Hopefully people can tune in for that. Messages for details if you need any help finding any of the stuff. And I'm looking forward to hear how it goes.
Yeah. Appreciate
you
letting
me
talk about it.
My good thoughts with you. And double kudos out to Fisher House Foundation. It's one of the three charities the Nova Opens Charitable Foundation is always focused on. So you guys have chosen well and who you're supporting, I think.
Yeah, we want to make sure that as much of the money is getting to the people who need it as is humanly possible. I mean, Mario himself is a veteran. So we looked at a bunch of different veteran support things. Of course, War Games for Warriors, the whole concept is we want to show appreciation and thanks. And Fisher House was the best one we could find. And we're really happy to be able to support them.
You guys are crushing it.
Sooner or later, we owe folks a Gene Stealer Cult review. It's not going to be tonight, though, unfortunately.
Oh.
Well, I mean, there's a lot to cover, right?
We should have just done it as a cult ambush episode where it just comes out of nowhere and bam.
That may be how it has to happen. Yeah, that may be actually how it has to happen. But I want people to have asked and been asking, and I apologize for not getting it out. That definitely should happen soon because it's a great army, and I think it's one of those that you will see it. You're going to see it played, and it's going to affect what people have to face in tournaments. There's some incredibly tricky things in there that the Genie-Star Cult General can do to you.
I think so. One of the reasons I didn't play in the GT at LVO is that I very much have been, I don't know, I'll call it emotionally ramping up for some of the armies that are forthcoming, and Gene Stealer Cult's at the top of that list. So I am very strongly considering or excited about, or whatever you want to call it, running a GSC army, both just because that's how I started the hobby back when I was a kid, and also, the majority of my play in 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th editions was with Tyranid, actually, not Guard. And so I'm super excited about it. So I'm semi-sad that we're not turning this show into one giant blip, ambushing halfway through the first turn. But, you know, when that time comes, I would love to be on to talk about it.
No, we definitely should, because the perspective of someone who's actually going to play it, I think, helps with that kind of stuff. The blips, which the codex comes with the blips, the codex actually comes shrink wrapped with blips and a range ruler to measure your distance from folks. It's a 9-inch ruler. It's not like you probably don't have a tape measure, but it's included here. Irrefutable 9 inches.
Yeah, those with Space Hulk PTSD, you know, from getting ambushed by Gene Stealer blips. The only thing I can hope is that some of these blips actually do in fact have zeros underneath them, so that it's just there aren't actually.
That's not going to happen.
That's
not going to happen. It's a very interesting mechanic, and I'm not trying to do a teaser here either. I want to let people know that it is coming, and we'll talk about it in a way that maybe has already some lists built associated with it too, and focus on just the stuff that you might see, especially since, you know, a lot of people have covered it by then. But yeah. I apologize for not having it out sooner.
Yeah, my hot take on it is that it's going to look really powerful. It's going to sound really powerful. A lot of people are going to buy into it. And then it's going to whittle down to the people who can really take advantage of those janky tricks. So I'm looking forward to discussing all that with you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Coming up soon, Nova Open registration, Mike.
Yeah, we're right around the corner. And I'm pretty excited. This is our 10th anniversary. And I cannot believe it's been a decade of my life. But the registration opens on March 1st at 8 p.m. Eastern. The web cart is already open at novaopenstore.com, although that's also linked from the main website. The schedule's up. There's all kinds of stuff available. There's like 100 seminars or more than that. There's a whole, like, several events that are happening the weekend before Nova that are like multi-day intensive painting seminars with artists like Roman Lapat from over in Germany. So that's pretty amazing. CK Studios are doing a whole studio-wide project for the charitable foundation that I don't think I can steal their thunder as far as announcing it, but that should be pretty crazy amazing this year in terms of Charity Army raffles and things like that. We'll have live music and entertainment and everything back in the lounge. We'll have a crazy GW preview event. I think this year, I think it's up in the cart too, we're going to do, for the first time, a Mournival Games Workshop combo playtesting and game design panel. So we'll talk about, you know, game design and the testing process, and also field questions from the room at large about how it works, why it works, what's gone wrong. You know, I'm sure people can zing us about some of the armies and units that have gotten through over the years now. So we'll have that, a bajillion painting classes. I won't go over all of it just because it would honestly take too long.
When's the date that the people can go to register? I mean, they can look at the events maybe now on the website, but when can people get in there and register if they want to try to compete for one of those Supernova packages?
March 1st, 8 p.m. Eastern.
Mark your calendar.
That's when, pro tip, you heard it here first, when you go to register, if there are any choices like drop-downs, like picking the size of your t-shirt and things like that in a Supernova bag, don't pick them when you're registering if you're trying to get the early bird stuff, which is almost everything premiere. The 40K GT, the 40K narrative, which has a couple hundred spots but will sell out in the first hour. First 400 people get a swag bag. First 400 people to register get a swag bag. The Supernovas, the Dwarf Novas, which are like mini Supernovas, all those things will sell in the first seconds to hour. So go in and know what you want. And then when you're in the cart, just immediately check out with the hot ticket stuff. Don't waste time looking for, you know, the Sunday afternoon event on your first go. Because there's nothing we can really do about it. It's the 10th anniversary. We've been selling out for a couple of years now, and so everybody's really excited. So be ready and quickly get through that cart. And that's not a pro tip a lot of people know, so you can consider yourselves having heard it here first.
Get the early bird, get in your cart, check out immediately, then go back and pick up some of the not limited stuff.
Yeah, and set your settings. So like if you pick the wrong shirt size because you were going really quickly, that's okay. Just go back and fix it after you've got the product.
And that's on March 1st, that's a Friday.
Is that a Friday?
It's Friday.
It's always March 1st, so that's I never actually know the day of the week.
It happens to be a Friday this year.
Excellent. So you guys will have your Friday paychecks or whatever, and reminder, everything that we do goes to charity. So the entire staff from me on down is all volunteer, and we appreciate it.
Heck yeah. If you guys are looking for something to do before Nova and after Adepticon, the Barnyard Brawl 3-day event is happening April 27th. Yeah. And 28th. Big grand tournament for 40K. Big tournament for Sigmar. Going to be some side events, some kill team events. I know a lot of folks in my gaming club are going to be traveling there. I'm helping coordinate on the vendor side. So I know there's going to be a ton of prize support. And there's going to be some on-site vendors. The people from Firmer Terror might be there. They're sponsors of our show currently. They make the Alpha game table. So if you might be able to see one there and kick the tires on it if you're still on the fence. Heard nothing but good things about these tables, and I even had the opportunity of playing on one. It's good stuff. I mean, it's got a six-leg design, whatever. I only mention it because they are sponsors of the show, and they're actually in the Southeast. They may be at the Barnyard coming up 27th and 28th.
Firmer Terror is an awesome company. They vend at Nova as well. And I should tell you, those tires are pretty cool. When you kick them, it'll turn out that they're actually metal and look more like legs than tires, but don't worry about it. They're awesome tires.
It's a figure of speech. Well, it's going to be a good time. It's going to draw a lot of players from around the area. Hopefully you're one of them. If you want some more information on that, hit us up. Happy to talk to you about it. But I actually went to this venue or the area and played in November and had an awesome time. And people all the way down the coast, the East Coast, were at Cam. And there's a lot of people I had not seen at other tournaments and still had a really good time meeting those folks. So it obviously draws a good crowd. Hopefully you guys can be one of them. That's the stuff I wanted to talk about, the calls to action on this show.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's nice to be in a 40K environment with so many cool things going on.
We said it earlier, and that's not just lip service. This is this is an absolute amazing time to be playing 40K. Lots of variety.
I think it's only going to get better too. The one of the things that was in LVO for was a lot of touching base with the GW folks, and I don't think that they're done. Is my feel is that, especially like on the community engagement and just pop culture front and everything else, they've been getting involved in so much more than they used to. but I don't think they're anywhere close to where they want to go. They seem to have some pretty cool visionaries that are leading things now compared to in the past. So I think we're going to see only more and more of an explosion in how things are going, which is kind of, I don't know how to anticipate it, but
ride
it's
that momentum.
Pretty cool.
I mean, that's,
yeah.
They're in, okay, let's talk about something for a second, and this is going to be close to a lot of people's hearts, Sisters of Battle Codex. This is one of those things. Well, because we've got a recent update, a Cerritos update, where we saw some art, you know, and I'm like, okay, cool art. Yeah, we know you can draw. Show us some miniatures, you know, but it's a journey, right? And they're letting us come along this journey, which I think is cool. And we got the chapter approved test, you know, basically the beta codex, something that is unprecedented released. I also want to talk about some upcoming stuff here in a second, but this is all theory craft. But anyway, beta codex for the sisters. This is a time to submit feedback. I mean, they're accepting feedback, taking feedback in all areas, and now an unprecedented request for feedback for a codex.
Yeah, and the feedback, I think, is being leveraged, which is also pretty cool. You know, it's not lip service from Games Workshop, so it's kind of exciting.
Yeah, so I mean, we're talking about riding that momentum, but part of that momentum is triggered by an engagement with the fans, us, you know, people that enjoy this game. And I think that if you submit the feedback through any of their channels, which is Facebook, emails, and Instagram, I think is one of the, even some way to communicate that, you know, not saying that your idea is going to be golden and going to be written into law the next day or whatever, but it clearly goes into the system and helps produce stuff that we like to see. It's just my opinion.
It's a good opinion.
Well, okay. So what I want to talk about is like weird, like mystery stuff or whatever. I don't know mystery, but you know, in White Dwarf, we know we're going to see some stuff about assassins.
Oh, yes. The assassins. Well, I guess it's been leaked. So there's that.
Well, the assassins coming up, you know, it got me thinking, okay, cool. We're going to get rules in the White Dwarf. One, that's great. I mean, whatever. I love White Dwarf. I've been saying I love White Dwarf for years. Since the relaunch, I've really liked it. And the magazine has continued to evolve. And now, I think Pete Foley's taken guest editor spot. At least he was on the last issue. And promised, well, I don't know, promise is probably a very strong word. They indicated that we'll start to see rules appear in the White Dwarf. And then they went on to say that, don't worry, if you missed the White Dwarf, we're going to have a mechanism in place to get you these rules for you to have. So whatever. It's probably a little bit of incentive to get the magazine in the first couple of months, and then down the road, they'll figure out a way to mass distribute it or whatever. I have faith.
I think it's a reflection too that, you know, as the studio is developing, my understanding, and I don't know this, but my understanding is that they've done a really good job of bringing some of these disparate pieces together under the same leadership. So I think, you know, the Warhammer community team and White Dwarf, I don't know this, but I think they were originally not together, you know, and so in a sense they were almost accidentally at odds, and I think that's all been remediated. So you're starting to see, you know, the different heads of these organizations within the company, you know, having great working relationships and being selected for really, really good reasons. And then leading teams that are increasingly cohesive in terms of what they're presenting to the community, playtesting, communication, feedback, White Dwarf, and everything else. And so I think you're going to see more and more of that kind of, you know, all of a sudden there's Pete Foley in a community article or in a White Dwarf article, and then there's rules that are going into the community side and vice versa, which I think is kind of exciting because it kind of starts to create a whole ecosystem of, you know, community engagement and different ways of, you know, experiencing and consuming the game.
Well, when you start to think that the assassins are a few pages in an index, and now we're seeing a little bit of a rewrite in a White Dwarf, possibilities are endless.
And assassins are pretty amazing, I'm not gonna lie.
Well, I don't know if the rules have been up on the community page yet, so I don't want to talk about them, but I just want to talk about the concept of the fact that this is going to appear in the magazine.
I can't wait to have a podcast talking about it.
Well, I mean, assassins are neat. I've always loved the story, like the Eversor, how he basically just is kept in a box, and they open the box and point it in a direction.
The least elegant assassin of all time. It's funny how very 40K that is, and that everything is just insanely over the top was the original thought process. And you've got, you know, the Vindicare is just an assassin, right? And so is the Calidus. The Calexus is a little bit crazier, but then the Eversor is just, what's this assassin do? Well, Well, we just point him at things. No mission whatsoever.
I love it. I like the old models. I like the new models. I think the assassins have they capture a little bit about what is that kind of mortal element of 40K, but yet still very 40K. Now it's hard to describe. I think a lot of people like these models.
It's true. The new assassin models are fantastic. And, you know, my favorite formation of 7th edition came out in a white dwarf. So I couldn't be more excited about that either.
Well, it's just going to be cool to see where this goes. I mean, I basically encourage people to get the white dwarfs because, well, one, I started doing it originally because of all the painting articles. In older editions of white dwarfs, they would skip steps in the painting articles. And it was very clear, like, dude, that is not step 4. There's like 9 steps in between 3 and your 4 here. But now they don't do that anymore. And I think it's just another way to kind of consume and get your hobby. You add more skills to your hobby package because, you know, we don't get to the same result the same way, or we don't get to good results in our own mind the same way. Sometimes we find tips and tricks and cheats that are easier for us to accomplish to get good miniatures.
Yep. Well, and they've done a lot to... I feel like we're plugging Games Workshop hard here. We're not being endorsed in any way.
I genuinely feel this way about the White Dwarf.
Yeah, I'm the same way. And you mentioned the hobby thing. I noticed, or I had an epiphany, that they've like slowly been modifying the way that they do their painting articles and the way that they do their paint lines so that like it is almost like 7-year-old, 5 to 7-year-old level easy to make a model look nice these days with the line that they've sort of gone to and the tips that they've been giving.
That's the videos. The videos show you something you can do in 5 or 10 minutes to get an edge highlight or a neat effect. The White Dwarf is a few extra steps. I think they take advantage of the print medium.
Yep.
But it's just, you know, you can look at... It's what you want to invest in your model. And I think it's anytime you can get, like sometimes it's just the layer of a color. Like, oh, I would have never thought to use Doombull Brown, you know, whatever, as just as an example.
Or is it Amball Blue now?
I've not gotten the Amball yet. Is that even out yet? Is it?
Yeah, I don't even know. That went up just this last weekend, I think.
The number of models they're putting out in these weird, like, wouldn't it be great if categories is mind-boggling to me.
Speaking of the New York Toy Fair, you know, we got that example of those models previewed from the Toy Fair. I think it's great that they're actually going out to these more mass market type toy fairs. And then we get also something to see cool, like the Rogue Trader that they previewed. Absolutely. The two AdMech things. Stunning.
I just want all of the Rogue Traders. I think they're so fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Talking about the mortal side.
I want them individually. They're the all of the models in that box are models I want to have or have wanted to have for years.
I just painted a Primaris Psyker, like the metal one. But whatever, you need more than one.
More pro tips.
Still a good
on
model.
The list that Paul's bringing now. There's a Primaris Psyker and a Shadow Sword,
which is a pretty good combo, by the way. It's a pretty good combo.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Oh, well, speaking of hobby tips, Chris, I know you've been painting gold. You've actually been painting Sanguinius from the Forge World 30K release. And you said you found some innovative ways to make your gold pop a little bit better.
Yeah, and it's interesting because the pop came from breaking out of my typical wash routine. So normally when I do my golds, and I've done it like this for years, I would do, you know, I'd start with a dark gold, and then I would bring it up to like a medium gold, like say retributor armor would be the current equivalent, right? But the thing that I started doing instead of putting my next wash of Agrax Earthshade is instead I started going for blue, green, and purple washes to bring out some of the contrast in there, and then building up the bright golds from there. And I pretty much went to a hobby shop and bought every single gold I could because I really wanted this model to look good.
Yeah, you wanna do it a level past whatever it is you've ever done before. You gotta push it past.
And I was able to do that. And I think that one of the things that sold it the most in terms of making the color rich and also making the contrast look dynamic and visually interesting was a mixture of bringing up the, you know, going through all the stages of golds, and I've done half steps of golds and silvers to bring up the extreme highlights and all that. And highlighting is something that pretty much everybody can figure out and know what to do with. But one of the things that really brought this to the next level was using the glazes and the washes that I had never used before.
On golds and stuff. I mean, that's something that it gives a whole nother hue to certain areas and lends a different focus to the model.
And you think about, think about the color wheel again too, because gold is kind of a yellow color, and the complement to yellow is purple. But you can also get away with using greens, because green is a split complementary kind of color. It's if you're on the dark, the dark end of the green, right? So there's some really good combinations you can get from that. And then when I thought, man, maybe I just brought this up a little bit too bright, I went back in with a yellow glaze on certain sections. Oh, nice. And what that did is it enriched the color without taking too much of the shine away. And it also, by carefully applying it in certain areas, I was able to get the effect of having one side seem like it was reflecting the light a little bit more, but still keeping a rich tone on the other, darker side. I'm really happy with how it came out.
Can't wait to see some finished pictures, man.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll put some up on the Facebook page. And it's kind of funny because I have him next to the Sanguinary Guard that I did for my first LVO appearance years ago. And you can tell the difference between the gold techniques and the more advanced stuff that I really tried to pull off with this. He definitely is brighter and stands out, and not in this gaudy kind of way, but in a more full contrast, better artistic expression kind of way.
We'll be the judge of that. I'm sure he is, though. I like where you're saying, where you're going with that. And Mike, you might have another hobby to talk about.
I do. It's so close to the same kind of hobbying that I thought it would be appropriate, because it's timely for me. This is a first for me, because when I entered the 40K hobby in terms of the online or widespread community, my blog was called Whiskey and 40K. And the idea was that I would talk about whiskey and about 40K. And I never talked about whiskey at all. But today, I'm going to break the seal, as it were. So there's a cocktail bar in D.C. If you're ever in the city, you should go. It's called the Columbia Room, and a bunch of different publications over the last couple of years have called it, quote, the best cocktail bar in the world. And that is a haughty thing to say. So being something of a cynic, when I went into the place for the first time, I expected a good cocktail. Similar to how when I went to see Hamilton this past weekend, I expected a good show. But in the case of both, I was shocked to actually consider it afterward the very best I've ever experienced. And in the case of the Columbia Room, two main reasons are their martini, their gin martini, and their Manhattan. I hate that I have to say gin martini these days, but people like to put vodka in cocktails. And those two drinks, which are very straightforward, they don't do anything special to them, except they fat wash their bourbon and their gin and their rye before they make those cocktails. And I had to find out what that meant. It's a relatively new thing on the scene. It was introduced, or at least popularized, by the New York cocktail bar Please Don't Tell, PDT. And the way it works is, and I mean, this is my hobby tip, because anybody can do this. If you enjoy a cocktail in your home, if you enjoy a glass of whiskey once in a while, you can do this at home and feel like a super cool, top flight bartender. As opposed to some of the more difficult infusions and other things that people are getting into, but that require more investment of energy and time. And basically, without getting too much into the science that I've been trying to learn myself about it, ethanol, so drinking alcohol, is a polar and nonpolar solvent. So it can dissolve or mix easily with both oils and fats, and also water-soluble things. And so if you take any kind of a fat, like bacon grease or...
Wait, I'm listening.
Butter or, peanut butter or coconut oil, which is where I'll go with this. You can, if you melt that fat down, like bacon grease or butter or whatever, you don't have to boil it. You just melt it so it's liquid, and put it into a jar or a container with, let's say, a bourbon or a gin, and give it a quick shake, and then just let it sit for an hour, then put it in your freezer. It's only like an hour, 30 minutes to an hour. You need to let it set after you put them in together. It'll infuse into the alcohol, but not too much. And once you put it in the freezer, when the fats freeze, they'll solidify mostly on the surface and separate again. And it's just a matter of shaking them, basically scraping them off or breaking off the big frozen fat block and then running the non-frozen liquor through like a coffee filter back into the jar. And it takes on two main characteristics that stand out. And again, this takes like 2 hours of your time to do in total. It takes on a silkiness.
But you could be doing other things during this time, though.
Yeah. So I used coconut oil, and coconut oil melts at like 76 degrees. So you literally just put it on the stovetop at simmer for 5 minutes, and you can look up ratios online. It's not that much. And the coconut oil becomes this clear liquid. You pour it in with the liquor in whatever container you want to. Shake it. 30 minutes later, put it in the freezer. An hour later, take it out and remove the coconut oil, which will be re-solidified on top. And when you're done with that, you get this cool infusion that is still just, let's say, bourbon, but it gains just the faintest hint of, let's say, coconut or bacon or butter or whatever your flavor you want to give it is. But more importantly, in my book, it changes the mouthfeel from just basically like water to almost silky, but not greasy.
Hmm.
And so the cocktails that you make with it go from, this is a great Manhattan, to it almost feels like the Manhattan is kissing you as you drink it. Which sounds ridiculous until you have one and you're like, I can never go back. So if you feel like it while you're painting next or while you're listening to your next course of narrative, you should totally take some coconut oil you have around your house or go get some for $5 from Amazon.
Or bacon.
Or bacon grease and give this a shot. And if my basic explanation doesn't make sense, you can Google about it. It's becoming a craze. There's lots of information and how-tos. But it's so very hobby. It's so very the kind of thing that those of us who like to paint like to do, that anyone out there who enjoys a good cocktail should totally give it a try.
Nice tip. Well, guys, that's our show for this week. I know it was a little bit of all over the place, but I mean, there's a lot of things that we really do care about that we talked about, and I'm happy to
get your time. We're just passionate hobbyists being passionate.
That's it. That's it. Yeah, man. Well, guys, hope you'll have a good rest of y'all's week. We'll be back again. And yes, I don't want to say that we're going to have a surprise Gene Steeler Cult episode. That might just be next week's episode.
I mean, no. I guess they're just going to have to wait for the surprise.
It's coming.
Next week's episode is a blip.
It's just one red dot.
Just right on the radar.
y'all have a good night, guys.
All right. Cheers, man.
Corner.